am short. I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. It's so good to be here, this meeting tonight. And thank you, Tracy and Mark, for asking me to come speak wherever Mark is. I'm joking. Welcome to the new people who identified, and if you didn't, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This program has really changed my life. I remember when I first came into AA, I looked at the steps, and I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm going to do these steps. There's no way I'm going to tell somebody my secrets. I just had things that I just never wanted to talk about. And I did not want to have to go make an amends, an apology for things that I felt that you deserved coming to you. So it was just, I had a bad attitude, and that's just what it was. And the God of my understanding at that time had shifted. I don't know what I was praying to. It was very, very dark, and it's not anything close to what I have today because of step two in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't have a book, grab a book. You know, this is the best ride of my life so far. You know, I am born and raised in L.A., not a lot of us, but I am born and raised in L.A. And my parents, they immigrated here from Guatemala, and they came here to give us a good life. I was born in Hollywood Presbyterian. I was like a Hollywood girl, lived in West Hollywood for the first couple years of my life. And my parents were together. They were very hardworking. My dad was like an assistant to a pharmacist, and my mom rose up the ranks of like cleaning houses to be an accountant. And she's a very, very smart woman. My dad, he loved to drink. And my dad, like, you just never knew who you were getting. My mom, on the other hand, she's like the opposite. She's like, you know, has a rosary in the purse, you know, like church-going woman. Saw her drink a couple times, smoke like one Newport cigarette. Never seen her to this. I know she's been to some wineries. I've never seen it, never been with her. And it's interesting. It was just very, very different. And my dad's mom, my grandmother, came from Guatemala to take care of us because they work like a lot of overtime to put us through Catholic school. I'm not a recovering Catholic. I think the religion is beautiful. It just turned out it wasn't necessarily for me. But they put us through these schools. So I'm like, a plaid skirt wearing, church going, goody two shoes, you know, and I have two older sisters. And my dad was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You never knew who was coming home. So if my dad was cool, he'd come, he's happy-go-lucky, drunk, all good. If he didn't, he'd come home and he'd beat up on my mom. And my mom would beat up on my sisters and me, and my sisters would beat up on me because I'm the youngest, but then I got hands and then they had to watch out. You know what I mean? But I used to get beat down. And it was just, that's just the way it was. And when, my parents didn't work out, my grandmother passed away, and my mom, like, she is like quick to recover, to get another man. And she got this man, and he was from the South. And he was to be my stepdad, and she moved in. We moved out of Hollywood, and we moved to South Central. And in South Central, it was all good. Still going to private Catholic school, still doing all those things. My stepdad, he loved to smoke weed and stuff like that. And he'd go to McDonald's, and I didn't mind because, you know, I'm a voluptuous woman and I like a happy meal. And he would hook it up, you know. And so it was fine. Like, I didn't see anything wrong with it. Like, I wouldn't think the way that we look here tonight, especially, we do not look like the way that I imagine alcoholics to look like or anything else. Like, but we are, you know, put a drink in us and we don't know what's going to happen in this room, you know. And but it was, you know, like, so I would see, like, and he never said he was, but like, I would see him doing these things and I just thought it was completely normal. Like, that's what adults do. And when I grow up, I'm going to do the same thing. Somehow they seem to be really, really chill. Besides my dad, he was not chill, but like, I thought that it was like a good thing. Like, this is what I get to do. I'm going to be entitled to do these things when I'm grown up. And what ended up happening is the riots broke out and we had to get out of there. And so we moved from one hood to the next. We moved to Inglewood. And in Inglewood, you know, I switched schools. I started going to this other private Catholic school, predominantly white school, which kind of like, no offense to anybody, but it made me feel very uncomfortable. We were like on the equal opportunity plan, you know, and I definitely felt it, but, you know, just rise above. My stepdad, you know, he's again from the South, and he would always say, you know, like, only God can judge you, Patty, and like, try to build me up to be a strong girl, you know. And so we're living in Inglewood, and my mom has her 40th birthday party, and the music is bumping and the grill is going, and everybody's drinking, you know. And my sister, she's not an Irish twin, but we're very, very close. She's a year and 11 months older than me, and she's like, let's go to the cooler and let's grab these wine coolers. And I said yes. And so, not like I was gonna say no. And so we go to the cooler, and then we grab these wine coolers, and I'm a high C girl, and it was fruit punch flavor. And so we go to the front of the building, and then we're drinking these wine coolers, and something happened. And it's not what people describe. I didn't get bigger tits, not at that time. I didn't get prettier, chittier, and wittier, all these things that these women talk about. But what I did know was I'm going back to the cooler, and I want more. I'm always going back to the cooler. I always want more. I want more and more and more. If I throw up, great. Get a second wind. Keep going. If I throw up, pass out, that's fine. I need a nap. You know what I mean? So that's the way that I felt about it. And so at that time, like, my sister, like, pulls out a little beady, and it looks like a joint, but it's really nicotine, and I'm smoking this. I'm just, like, you know, like, doing what they do in the movies, and I'm thinking I'm having the time of my life. And I went back to the house, and I sat down on the sofa, and the next door neighbor came over and touched me inappropriately, a grown man. And that was my first really big resentment. I was like, I can't trust men. Men are filthy, disgusting pigs. And that's the way that I would view them up until I got sober. Like, I just did not, I had a very strong mistrust in men. And my stepdad, he went over there and beat the hell out of this man. And I remember feeling that sense of safety, like, at least he would protect me, you know? And you know, I tell you this because when I did my inventory, you know, Melissa over there, she was the one who took me through the steps the first time all the way through. And I couldn't think about what my part was, and she helped me to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, I have been a victim my entire life. There is things that people, that I believe that people do. And, you know, like, I've been through a lot, you know, with any rape, date rape, any kind of touched by a man inappropriately, all these things that happen, I will use that over and over and over again to get one past you. And if I go and I put holes in your wall, or if I sleep with your boyfriend, or if I steal your stuff, you know, it's like, and I get caught, hey, I'm sorry, but don't you know what I've been through? Like, you should be able to give me a pass for that kind of stuff. And that's what it was, you know, like, that's what I do. And I'm a total victim. And so, you know, like, at 10 years old, I don't become a daily drinker like some of you guys in here. But I definitely, anytime I could get my little hands on something, I was going to drink it. It didn't matter what it was, you know. So my other grandma, you know, the spare grandma from Guatemala, comes over again, another one. And she comes through, and, like, my mom is, my mom is, like, working hard. And she does, like, the bingo after school. And my grandmother loves Johnny Walker Red. And I love Johnny Walker Red. So I'm drinking this Johnny Walker Red. Me and my sister are drinking the Budweiser's out of the refrigerator. It's, like, innocent, cute fun, we're thinking. And then we're filling it up with apple juice to keep the consistency, the color, you know. And that's what's going on, you know. And when high school, or before I go to high school, actually, my dad came. He came to pick us up, and he was the weekend dad, and he would take it to the museums and hikes and different things like that. And he had remarried to this European woman, and he came by and he said, you know, we're moving to Switzerland, and we're not coming back. And I just remember thinking, that's like resentment number two. I'm like, look at this sperm donor, abandoner, loser, you know, like, just this terrible man. And, like, what he was doing, now I know, after, you know, being sober long enough, is that he was doing the best that he could. He was being the best father that he knew how to be. And I just couldn't see that because I'm blinded by resentment and all these things, and, you know, and drank over it and over the pain for years to come, you know. And so he leaves, and I become that promiscuous girl because I'm looking for a daddy now, you know what I mean? And so, and that's what, you know, that's pretty much what goes on for a little bit. And, like, I'm finding my fulfillment from everything outside of me, right? And I can't wait to get out of this house, you know, like, not that my mom didn't provide, and she may not have said, I love you, but she provided a nice house, the best schools, the food on the table, the clothes on my back, and I was just ungrateful brat. You know? And so when I get out of there, and I get out of there like I'm escaping or something, I'm 17 years old, I graduate high school from the skin, you know, like, not, it was a pretty low GPA. But I graduate high school and I go to Cal State Northridge because I didn't want to go to Long Beach where my sister went because she was tweaking out there and I wasn't going to be a tweaker like her. So I said, I'm going to go to Northridge. You know, there's no tweakers in Northridge. Yeah, right. Okay. And so I went, you know, I went to Cal State Northridge, and I'm in the dorms, you know, and I never spent the night at anybody's house, you guys. Like, again, I'm like confession 2 times a week, confessing, you know, and snitching on everybody. And that's what I'm doing. And so I come out here. I've never slept over anybody's house. And like now, you know who I am? I'm Patty. I'm from Inglewood, and I'm a gangster. And I create this whole new persona because I am so afraid of you knowing who I am. Because, like, if you know who I am, you're not going to like me. I feel like a complete loser. I feel like a fraud. Like, I don't even know who I am. I don't even really know what I like. If you like it, I'm a chameleon. I like it, too. Like, I just have no personality. I don't know what's going on. But I say I'm this hood girl from Inglewood. So if you know, I'll scare you. Maybe I'll just scare away the ones I don't need to be involved around with, and I'll attract the ones that I do. And I start going to these frat parties, man. That jungle juice, it's like a bunch of liquor and a little bit of like Kool-Aid, you know. And I love drinking that stuff, man. I drink that stuff. I throw up all over the place, dance, you know. Every song was my song, you know what I mean? It was fun, man. And it starts like at the frat party on Friday, and then it's like Saturday, and then it's Sunday, then it's Margarita Monday, then it's Taco Tuesday, then it's Wet Wednesday, then it's Thirsty Thursday, then it's every day. It's every day, you know. And the reality is that I don't really know how to be with you guys. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the only way that I'm my true self and feel comfortable with who I am is when I'm drunk, when I'm loaded. That's when I feel comfortable. I could be with you. But if I'm not, I am very, very uncomfortable. And I'm really just obsessively thinking about when's the next time? When's the next time? What do I got to have? Who do I have to steal from? You know what I mean? And to get what I need to get. And that's just how I'm living. Like, my sister, she, you know, I told you guys, she's a year and 11 months older than me. So I get her 18-year-old ID. And she has a mean mug face, you know, darker skin than I am, beautiful skin. And she has, like, this kind of face like this. And so I use her ID, and I'm like that, too. And so... I'm going down to Mexico, you know, because you drink at 18, and I'm down there, I'm partying, and I'm just throwing. I love to throw up, apparently, because I've said it like 3 or 4 times now, but I throw up all over the club. They kick me out. I'm like, I don't want to be here anyway, you know. And I get to the border, and I straighten up, because I got to walk across there, and they're not going to lock me up here, you know, hell no. And so I was doing that, and I thought I was having the time of my life, the real full-blown college experience, you see. I have no idea that I have no choice over drinking or not drinking. I have no idea, because I'm thinking this is the way that life is supposed to be like. Like, this is the way that I've seen Jim Belushi do it on Animal House. Like, I'm gonna live this life, you know? And sooner or later, like, people just don't wanna be around me, man. Like, I'm an unlovely creature in my cups. That's what it talks about in the big book. And that is exactly who I am, you know? Like, I used to judge my dad for being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Well, guess what? Now I'm Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You don't know what's gonna happen. You know what I mean? And people start telling me, Patty, you can't hold your liquor. And I'm like, how dare you? You know, like, what are you talking about? And then I wake up in the morning, you know, sometimes with a big one, just one, let's be clear, with one lump on my head, my knuckles are bloody. And they're like, well, you should see what you did to her, you know? And I was like, okay, she didn't get me too bad, but I was just drunk. I was just drunk. Like, I'm sorry. You know, it won't happen again. And maybe it's the dark liquor. Maybe I need to just start drinking vodka only. And so I switch it up, because vodka doesn't make me put holes in the wall. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm not going to get that violent, you know? You know, I just cry a lot. Start getting real sad. And so I graduate college by the skin of my teeth. And when I graduated, the day of my graduation, I was hungover. I remember back in the day, we used to be so lame. Me and my friends, we used to get the bottles and put the date, like the significant date, and put it on the mantle like it was a trophy. You know what I mean? It was loser behavior. But like, we used to do that. And I remember I thought that I had it going on, you guys. Like, I was like, I had this beautiful red hair, but it was really orange. I didn't put any makeup on. My mom said, you look like you got ran over by a truck, and I'm graduating college. And she bought the package with all the pictures and stuff, but they're not hung up anywhere, you guys. They're in a filing cabinet somewhere. I look tore up, you know what I mean? And so I graduate college, and I'm like, now what? You know, like, it's like what Bill talks about. I felt like I had arrived. I got the degree. I've done everything on paper that one is supposed to do. I've done it all. Now I have a career. I got a job five days after I graduated, and it was for the LA County Probation Youth and the Department of Family Services as a residential counselor at a group home. And I'm a sick alcoholic, you guys. Like, but I have no clue that that's what's happened. That's who I am. I'm in complete denial, but you know, I know that I could do whatever I want because I can achieve things. Like, I know that there is evidence of this, so I'm thinking it's all good. And I'm going into these group homes and I'm telling these girls, like, you know, like, you guys are living a certain way, like, you know, you guys need help. And then we take them to like Tarzana Treatment Center and different places to go and like go to these, you know, adolescent meetings for alcohol and drugs and stuff, and I'm just like counting down the minutes, and I'm like, I gotta go hit the liquor store, I gotta go to the club, I got the whole clothes in the trunk, you know what I mean, like, I gotta get changed up, I gotta get ready to go out, and that's what was going on, and I'm telling them, and while I'm driving this 15 passenger van hungover, like, you guys don't have to live like that anymore, and just a complete liar, hypocrite, you know. And I'm living, you know, like, I had lived with this boyfriend, and this boyfriend, he was the real drunk. I used to mark my bottles and stuff, and I go to work with my heart, you know, my job that I got with my degree, and, you know, he's a bum loser working at the airport, you know, like, I'm just so judgmental, you know, and I come home and I see the bottle was lower, and I'm like, you are a sick alcoholic, but let me tell you something, only an alcoholic is gonna mark the bottle, right? Like, it was me. You know, it was me too. And so, you know, he put his hands on me and I'd fight back. And I remember this one time I saw my blood and I blacked out. And the next thing I knew, like, I had my hand, this part of my hand was like over here, and I broke my hand on his face. And I was just like, you know, like, this guy is a piece of crap, whatever. And he calls the cops on me, but he was the one who hit me first. So as he went to go call the cops, I proceeded to beat myself up even more because I'm not going to jail, you guys. Like, there is no way. I only like to be in handcuffs, like, when I say so. I'm not trying to be in these handcuffs. So I was like, there's no way. And so I start beating myself up. So when they come, they're like, oh my God, are you okay, miss? I'm like, yeah, man, like, you got to get him out of here, you know? But when, you know, he gets the... they say, do you want the restraining order? I said, yes. But when he calls me from that jail, what do? I have no self-esteem. I have no self-worth. And I go and I get him and I sneak him into my apartment like somebody's watching me to bring him in there. And he loves me. And he makes sure that I'm well-fed and I'm bathed because it's my right hand and he took care of me. And that's what I know what love is. I have no idea. You know what I mean? And I just, you know, I just keep going and going and going. And then I was hanging out with this girl, and long story short, she was on some other stuff. I don't know what. And she bit a couple chunks out of my body in her blackout rage. And I dragged her out and I got kicked out of this apartment after this violent situation that happened. And I moved into this apartment that I actually live in now. And I'm there and I'm alone and I don't really have a lot of friends. I go to work, I go to the Food for Less and I get the red wine, because if you don't know, red wine helps you so that you don't get cancer. But at the same time, I'm looking on my phone for ways to kill myself. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, how can I look like I killed myself without killing myself? Because I don't want my mom to find out. You know what I mean? And I delete the history because they're coming, you know? And I'm seeing shadows of people walking by my window, but I live on the second floor. And I start thinking to myself, I have a steel pole right next to my door because if somebody comes up and tries to break into my apartment, I'm going to kill these people. So I'm suicidal and I'm homicidal and I'm a complete masochist because I'm carving on my thighs, I'm carving on my wrist where people can't see, and I'm just cutting up myself because I cannot take the way that I feel, you know, and I don't know yet that I have alcoholism. I do not know. And this goes on for years, you know, it goes on for years and it's just Groundhog Day. And what ends up happening is that on the week before St. Patty's Day, because if you guys forgot, my name is Patty and that's my day. So before that week before, I'm praying to God. I'm like, whatever God I had at that time, I was like, if I am supposed to be like sober, I'm 29 years old at that point. I'm like, if I'm supposed to get sober, if I make it to 30, I'm going to try to do this thing. And this is what I'm thinking. I had just turned 29. It was March. I turned 29 in November. So I had months of disaster ahead of me of what I planned if I was going to survive. And so I was like, okay, but if you give me a sign, because I'm hippy dippy like that. I'm like, if you give me a sign, then I'm going to stop. And so what ends up happening is I go to the bar crawl. I drink everything, you guys. And I'm only with my last friend. By the way, I've been sleeping with this man for like 7 years or something. And his girlfriend of like 5 years. And we're out there in the bar crawl and I'm drinking. And then I took a pill for a headache and I smoked some, you know, whatever. And then I'm like, this is the best time of my life. You know, like this is it. Next thing I know, I time travel and I am back in the valley. And I remember we're standing in the kitchen and she's giving me a shot and I'm telling her, I'm like, you guys are gonna have a beautiful life together and you're gonna have beautiful children, you're gonna be married. And meanwhile, I've been sleeping with her boyfriend for years. Like, it's just scumbag behavior, you know? And so next thing I know, I'm like, what? Like, what's going on here? I felt water and I had hit the fire hydrant and the water was shooting up in the air. And I was like, oh my God, I got to get the hell out of here, you know? And I told you guys I'm a college grad, I'm smart. So I start to trudge the road to Happy Destiny up the block. But I forgot I left the purse in the car, dude. And now I'm like, oh man, the jig is up. So I'm going back and I'm like, I hear the sirens, like, it was me. And it's like, clearly it was me. I'm soaking wet head to toe. And they give me the breathalyzer, and I'm like, you know, give me a little bit of air. And they're like, ma'am, you're going to jail. And I'm like, oh no, you know. And I'm like, I'm gonna kill myself. This is what the police report says. I'm gonna kill myself. And they're like, ma'am, if you keep saying you're gonna kill yourself, we're gonna take you somewhere else. And I was like, I don't want to go there with the long arm jacket. You know, I was like, I don't want to go there. And I remember at that point, like, I kind of snapped back, and I was sitting there in the waiting to get my picture taken, and I was like laughing. And I thought it was funny. I'm like, I'm in jail, you know, like I'm like an idiot. And so I was in the cell and then there's these women there with these fuzzy socks on with high heels and they're giving me legal advice. They were hookers and they were giving me legal advice. And they were like, you know, you can get out on your own OR. And I'm like, let me tell you something. I don't know nothing about nothing. And I was like, what are you hoes talking about? Like, I don't even know what that is. And they were still in there, but then they were getting out one by one. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm stuck here. And so what I decided was the last plan. I had a four-leaf clover in my pocket, and it was a pin, and I was going to take this pin, and I was going to slice my wrist open. I was going to grab the hose blanket, and I was going to put it over me, and I was just going to bleed out and die. You know, like, that was what's going to be the dramatic ending of my life. And my voice, it sounded like my voice, but it had to definitely be God speaking. And you know, it was like, don't kill yourself. And I put the pin in my pocket, and I did what any good, normal, alcoholic person would do, called my mommy. She comes to pick me up from jail. She has $10,000, a Rolex, and like a title to something. And I was like, I did not kill anybody. Like, I just killed the hydrant, you know? And so she came to pick me up with my oldest sister. And if you know anything about Latino families, like, the oldest sister is like mom too. And I just felt like so complete shame. You know, as I'm walking down, and it's like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I don't need a dictionary when I'm looking at some of these words. Like, I know the feelings. I know what it is. I have experienced it several times, you know. And that last time I was just like, oh my God. And like, they're driving me back home and I'm just like dry heaving out the car. And I just felt complete shame, you know. And they come to my house where I still live. You could live in the same place and get sober in the same place. It's crazy, at least my experience. And so I'm sitting in that apartment and my sister and my mom are sitting there and they're like, what is going on with you? You know, and I'm like, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a drug addict and I want to kill myself on a daily basis. And they just had this look on their faces and I just felt like just complete horror, you know. And it turns out years later, they told me that they knew. So I misinterpreted that look, but they knew. But I needed them to leave. I needed them to leave because I had a little bit of something left and I was going to do that and I was going to be all good, just like I've done every single other time. Always reaching for something outside myself to make me feel better. And that was what was going to do it. And I did that and it did absolutely nothing. And I knew, like, I had known the jig was up, but the jig was up, you guys. But I had a plan. I was going to come to you guys because that friend that I was sleeping with, he went to AA years before and I went with him loaded to a meeting. I was like, I found you guys really depressing. I was hoping I'd never have to be here. And so like, I was like, you know, I know what I'm going to have to do to, you know, I need to get a wet reckless so I can keep my job. All I'm caring about is my prestige. That's all I'm caring about. I'm not caring about anything else. And not the fact that I could have killed somebody or killed myself, nothing. Like, it was just, I just need to make sure I keep my job. And so I went to it was Monday, March 19th, 2012 was a Monday. And I told my boss and she's like, yeah, you're probably gonna lose your job. And I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna go to court and I'm gonna try to make this work. And I went to another fellowship on a Wednesday and I came to you guys on a Friday. And I remember walking into that room and there was something different happening to you guys than what I could see when I actually took time to look at myself in the mirror. You know, you guys were happy, not to be all corny, but you guys were happy, joyous, and free. And I was miserable, suicidal, and homicidal. That's there. It was a drastic difference between what was happening. And I didn't believe, at first I was like, I don't think these people are really sober. Like, it can't be for real. Like, I could believe 30 days, but I can't believe 10 years. But I could see there was something different happening. There's a different energy that was happening. The same way that it was when I walked in the doors here, there is a power happening. And if you don't feel it, you know, like, keep coming back, because there is something happening in these rooms. There are miracles that happen in these rooms, you know, and like, and one of my miracles is that every day I used to pray to God to kill me. Every day I'd pray, I'd be like, please take me out, kill me. I don't want to wake up. And I'd wake up pissed off. Like, why am I still here? If I took one more pill, maybe then, nothing. Wake up again, pissed off. Now it's like a completely different story, you know, but it didn't start off that way. My first 30 days, I did not get a sponsor. I was like, I don't need anybody telling me what to do. I got a mom. She's in Inglewood. I don't need anybody out here. And I wanted what that guy had. That guy had 5 years and no sponsor. And I got that for 9 months. You know what I'm saying? And not like 9 months pregnant, like, but 9 months. And so I was just like, that was what was going on in my mind. And like, and so after 30 days, like, I was walking home, and like, I had to walk by a liquor store and the 7-Eleven, and I was just like trying to have that tunnel vision, you know? And I was coming to you guys every single day because the lady in the other program told me, get this paper signed, and then you go to the judge, and then you could tell the judge, and maybe they'll give you a wet reckless. So I was just scheming and plotting, you know? But I couldn't unhear what I heard here, which was the truth, that I'm a sick alcoholic, that I have an obsession, that I have an allergy, that I have a spiritual malady. There was no doubt. You heard what I said, you know what I mean? Like, it was obvious, but I didn't hear, I've never heard anybody say it before. I didn't know what it was until I came here, you know? And so I'm walking home, I scream in the pillow ever so dramatically. The next day I came to the meeting and I got the meanest bitch to sponsor me, you know what I'm saying? She was mean. She said, Patty, you need to stop wearing those clothes. If you bend over and I could see your, you know what? Like, you can't be wearing that. And you don't sit down before the meeting, you shake hands and you say hello to people. And you get a commitment at every single meeting. You need to get that book and you need to read it cover to cover. If you have any questions, ask me. Then we're going to start working the steps. And I was like, oh my God, what an order. I can't go through with it, you know? But I did. I was like, I'm going to listen to this. She was like an old witch to me. But she's thank God for her, you know? Thank God for her. And, you know, after some circumstances happened and I ended up getting a different sponsor and I got Melissa. And I started working these steps and I started doing these things. And I remember when I did my fifth step, I was telling you, when I first saw these steps, I was like, no way I'm telling anybody my secrets. The first deepest, darkest thing was the first thing I said. I'm not saying you have to do it like that, but that's what I did. And we went to the woods. Well, it wasn't really the woods, but it's like in Porter Ranch. And I was like, we're going to do it over here. And I don't want anybody to see or hear, you know, what's going on. And I was just crazy, and thank God, she has so much patience, and I started reading these things, and it was just like, you know, like, when I went home, and I had to do that hour of meditation, I prayed, and I was just like, I was relieved, that somebody else knew, and somebody else understood, and I didn't have that level of shame that I once had, you know, but how did I get there, though, was obviously admitting, but the second step, most importantly, is when I was told, like, I could write down to God in my own understanding what that looked like for me. And that was a very, very interesting proposal, because, like, I grew up in the church. Nothing wrong with the church. But I was like, I obviously couldn't connect with that God, but maybe I could connect with this one. And so I thought about that really deeply. And I don't have to have, like, I don't really subscribe to the idea of bigger God when things happen. I need the God that I wrote down. Maybe some things have shifted a little bit, but it's the same. I need to plug into that power. It exists in my life if I allow it to. And even if I don't, I got news for you. God is going to be there anyway. And so, like, you know, I went on to make my amends and stuff like that. And one that I, you know, the one that always rings the hardest for me was my sister. And my sister, she had three kids, and I missed them growing up. You know, like, they were just, you know, I go to the parties and stuff and I'd be all drunk. And then, like, you know, it would be Christmas, and I just sing Feliz Navidad, but that's the only thing I know in the song. So I just kept saying that over and over and over again, embarrassing everybody. And it was just, I was just a messy person. And, you know, and it wasn't cool. And my sister made sure I knew about that. She's like, I've heard you say a lot of apologies, and like, I need to see action at this point. And that's what this program is about. So it's like, I have to take action all the time. And even though I think that I'm doing my best, my sister reminded me last fall that like, we need more of you. And so it's like, there's always, I always can readjust and do more when, you know, even when I can realize it myself, somebody bringing it to my attention, I acknowledge somebody else's feelings instead of making excuses. I actually just try to follow through now, you know? And, but the one that I could not do was my dad. I could not do it. I was like, he had moved back, when I just had gotten sober. And he moved in with my sister. He split up with his wife. So he was living with my sister. And I was just like, I can't do it, you guys. But everybody at the podium, I don't know, God speaks through everybody. And so, but I kept hearing the same message about getting your family back. And that's not always everybody's story, but like getting your family back, reconnecting with this person, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, Father this, Father that. And I'm like, okay, God, I get it. You know, and like, I started to ask questions to my mom and my sister. I'm like, what could tell me about him? And it's like what the St. Francis prayer says. It's like, it's better to understand than to be understood. I needed to understand my father. You know what I mean? I needed to like really get what the picture was, because nothing else was working, you know? And I start to find out the kind of upbringing that he had, you know, like his mom was an alcoholic, like she drank a lot, and they used to drop him off like at random places, random family members. He didn't know how to be a father. You know what I mean? And that's what he was bringing to me. And I started to grow empathy and compassion for this man, you know? And at 3.5 years sober, I made that amends to him, you know? And I thank God that I was able to do that, because last year, well, in December of 2024, we got notice that he had cancer. No, not even. Yeah, it was. And then 3 weeks later, he died, you know? And it's like, and if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, and he moved back to Switzerland, you know? And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, like, there is no way he was always going to be a sperm donor, a loser, an abandoner. He was always going to be this picture. He was always going to be the reason why I drank so much and got into so many messes, and why I was a big ass hoe out here. Sorry about the A-word. And that was a lie. You know, that was a lie. I used that situation for the victim card, you know. And I thank God, the one thing that I, you know, because I was able to make that amends to him, that we were good. You know, there was no bad blood. You know, I was FaceTiming him, and he's laying in that hospital bed, and he's like, I'm going to get better. When I get better, you could come out. You could come out and we'll go and visit. And like, don't come out here now. And like, and that was very hard, because in my mind, I'm like, I want to go out there and be with him no matter what he says. I should be out there, you know? And there, people are telling me like, oh, you should go out there. You should go out there. I always want what I want, and I will grab for what I can get. And I needed to be respectful to this man's wishes, that I didn't go, you know, and like, and it's very, very hard, but I'm so grateful for this program, because I would have never, ever made amends and try to have a relationship with him as best as we could, you know. And there are a lot of things that I brought with me into AA that I would not let go. I thought that I did a proper third step. I turned my will, my life over to the care of God, you know, and like, that's not all the way true. I keep and I hold on to things with a kung fu grip. I don't want to let it go. I could take care of this, God. You could have all the rest of it. You know what I mean? And one of those things was my sexual conduct. I was in here. I was like the doormat of AA for my old home group. Like, you know what I mean? I was the welcome mat, I mean. and it was trashy. And there'd be people that'd be like, hey, Patty, like, you know, like, you shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, you're really judgy, you know, like, I bet you in your day when you were young, like, you did this, like, it's just a lot of crap, you know, and I'm having an affair with the guy at work, and he's engaged, and I'm having an affair with the guy who, he's a newcomer, like, I'm 13-stepping him, but I'm like, he's not really 13-stepping, he's been coming in and out for years, like, accumulate the time. And it was just a hot mess. Like, I was a hot mess, and like, sooner or later it happens the same way. I can't look in the mirror. I can't look at you and be honest with you. You ask me how I'm doing. Oh, I'm fine. But like, I feel like a dirty scumbag. And because I'm doing, like what I was talking about, I'm doing terrible things. I'm living terribly. So I'm just pushing God out of my life, and I'm utilizing other things to fill this God-shaped hole. You know what I mean? And it was just a mess. It was a mess. And then finally, like, I had to let go of that behavior. Like, it was just killing me. And I didn't realize how close I was going to a drink. I did not realize how close I was getting. It just inch by inch by inch. And I can't see it. You know, I'm just thinking, I have no remorse. And there's this guy, Robert, and Ronnie, these two men that I taught, that I would talk to in my home group. And Robert told me, you know what, Patty, you need to read 69 and 70. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know, and I did. And Ronnie, he would share from the podium like this and talk about how he went out because of his sexual conduct. And these seeds were planted in my head, and I knew, like, something is not right here. Like, I don't feel right. And I read that, and it was like, if you don't have, like, it's total paraphrase, but it's like, if you don't have any remorse, like, you will drink again. And I was scared. And so I just cut off, I did some step work around that with my sponsor at that time. And I thank God for her, because she had been through a lot of that stuff too. So it's like, if you think in here, like, you're too dirty, or you've done these things and nobody's going to understand, I believe, like, 10 out of 10, there's going to be somebody who has done it, or somebody who they could point you to get help and to talk about what's going on in your life. Like, I have no secrets today. I have no secrets. Like, I am an open book, you know, for the people that I trust. They know everything that's going on, because I can't be riddled with the secrets. Like, I am as sick as my secrets, and I do not want to go back out there and find out what's going to happen. I just don't want to do it, you know? And I've been working with other people. Like, I help and sponsor women and stuff like that, Light of My Life, all these things. And, like, in these times, like, we're doing the steps over and over again, and I keep rereading these things out of the book, and it's like something going on with me, you know. My stepdad had passed away, and when he had passed away, like, it's just strange things started coming into my mind. Like, I started having memories and, like, or nightmares that turned into memories, turned into flashbacks. And I realized, like, you know, like, this man had raped me several times as a teenage girl. And the man who protected me from the molester, right? And it was just like, it hit me, like, so hard. And it was such a dark, dark time in my sobriety. Like, I really wanted to kill myself, you guys. Like, I really wanted to die. And, like, my sobriety sister was like, you know, Patty, she's like, the book says you can go and get outside help. And I was like, that is for weak people. Like, I'm not going to a therapist for them to tell me, you know, like, oh, woo, woo, whatever. Like, and I just, like, contempt prior to investigation, you know? And, like, and that was, that I was very, very wrong, you know? And so I went and saw a therapist, and, like, and thank God, you know, dealing with therapy and having a God of my own understanding and having a sponsor, I was able to make an amends in my house. I was able to make an amends, and, like, and I forgave that man. And again, it came to understanding, like, it comes to find out, like, he probably went through some things. And sick people, you know, like, hurt people. And, like, there was this another level of forgiveness that happened that came within me. And I didn't have to drink over it. All these things, like, things that happen, I don't have to drink over them. I could find reasons to go and destroy my life and do all these things. And, like, for what, you know? Like, I actually want to live today, you know? And, like, the women that I sponsor, like, they come to me with crazy things. And I'm like, okay, let's match these crazy things, because I got a lot of them. And I try to help them, you know? And I understand that there's something going on between me and God, where God wants me to be reading the first 164 pages over and over and over again. And I have been, and I'm grateful for it. You know, it's like, it is definitely, like, constantly thinking of other people, being of maximum service. Like, those things are real and true. Those are the ways that I've been able to have self-esteem, where I'm not with a person who's going to put hands on me and we're going to fight it out. You know what I mean? I don't do, like, illegal things anymore. I'm not stealing out here anymore. I don't try to steal people's time or suck the life out of them and you know, use them for everything they got. I don't do those things anymore, you know? And, like, I try to stay as active as possible. My sponsor likes to say that, like, I'm so active because I'm so sick. and that might be true, but, you know, like, I try to stay active, and I try to do as many things as possible. And in that time, you know, like, after I was done with my promiscuous life, I started seeking God in a different way. And I visited all these different places, and, like, I would go to different temples and, like, mosques and, like, all these different things. And, like, and I found myself, like, on my 40th birthday, I was like, you know, like, I want to, go and be at the Wailing Wall in Israel. And something had called me to go over there, you know what I mean? Again, I'm a spiritual person. I'm not necessarily, I believe all religions are beautiful, but I'm not Jewish, I'm not Christian, none of that. And I was like, I'm gonna go there. And at 12 a.m. LA time on my birthday, my 40th birthday, I was there at the wall. And the energy that was there, it was like people were singing and praying, and it was just like this it was like the energy was flowing so crazy there. It's like I felt the presence of God. Now, I'm not saying you got to go to the Middle East to find the presence of God. But what I am saying is that if I seek God, God will always disclose himself to me. I know that, you know, and I could be anywhere in the world, anywhere in my house, anywhere on the freeway, you know, anywhere. And I could connect with God and God is there, you know, and that is a beautiful thing for somebody who just literally just wanted to die. I wanted to die or I was going to kill you. You know, it was bad. But today, you know, like I keep myself busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I try to be the best family member. I try to be the best girlfriend to my boyfriend. I try to be the best cat mom. You know what I mean? And the best employee and really just try to be in the best version of myself that I can. And when I fall short, okay, like it's not the end of the world. I'm not perfect. Progress, not perfection. It's not a loophole in AA, but it kind of sounds like it. But you know what I mean? It's progress, not perfection. And that's all that I do. Because like if I walk around thinking that I'm going to achieve some type of perfection, I'm never going to measure up. And I might as well just say, why? Why am I doing this anyway? You know? And I refuse to question like what really goes on in here. Instead of questioning it, I just participate. You know, I participate and I'm just here. And I do what's asked of me, and I'm grateful that I got to come here again. I was pretty surprised. I was like, what? You want to hear from me again? But it's like, you know, I thank God for it, you know, because I need to come up. I need to be reminded. I need to go on those panels and remind myself and talk about what it was like, because it's not so far. It's not so far from me. You know what I mean? I could go out this door today and just go get drunk for whatever stupid reason, you know what I mean? But I'd rather pick up the phone, call my sponsor, call a fellow, do a commitment, show up early, do what I gotta do to be able to keep this thing. Because keeping it all for myself isn't gonna work. So when I get to be able to share it and remember, it's right here. It's not in the back of my head. It's in the front of my mind, and know who I really am when I'm in my cups. And I don't want to return to that. And I'm grateful today that I'm sober. I'm grateful that I came here today. Thank you again, Tracy. And that's it. Thank you.